Imagine you live in Britain, near the end of the Roman occupation, in the early 400s AD. You live on a small farm with your mother and father in the town of Dumbarton, which is nestled on the west coast of Britain. It is morning, and the sun prods you awake with its bright, unforgiving beams. You stretch and stumble out of bed, padding sleepily over to your roomy wardrobe, pulling on a tunic and cinching it tight, then starting down the cold wood floor to the kitchen, where your father is already eating his breakfast of sausage, eggs, and baked beans. When your mother sees you, she sets out your own portion across from your father. You eat in silence, except for the fire, crackling merrily in the hearth, watching as your father finishes breakfast, and then carefully puts on his official white robes. He is going to a town council meeting in the nearby town of Benevem, and so would be gone for several days. After a farewell to your mother, your father asks you to come and saddle his horse. You finish breakfast quickly and follow your father outside. Now it is evening. Your mother has left shortly after your father to do some shopping in Benevem. The sun's shadows were beginning to lengthen, and you sigh heavily, scruffing the tender grasses with the tip of your sandal, as you walk under the shady boughs of your father's orchard. Protect yourself and your mother as best as you can, and may our Heavenly Father's blessing go with you, your father had said before riding away into the distance. You sigh again as the sheep pastures start coming into view. Your father and mother are devoted Christians, but you are not. You are almost 16 and have made it very clear to the family that you wanted nothing to do with religion. Yet your parents seem to still have hope for you, that one day their God would change your heart. As you crest the last gently sloping hill of the orchard, you are met by the shepherd, a good friend of yours from all the times you have visited this place. After conversing with him for a few minutes, you set off for the cliffs, overlooking the sea nearby, to watch for any approaching vessel. Rounding the last bend in the trail, you stop on the cliff's edge to catch your breath, as you look down on the activity of the beach. Large groups of men were going back and forth between the beach and large canoes. They were heavily armed with crude shields and spears. Their long hair streamed out behind them in the breeze. Curiosity fills you as you look down on these strange people. You start to climb down the side of the cliff to get a better look at them and to try to catch what they are saying. Your purple tunic blends in well with the small shrubs and trees growing bravely on the face of the cliff, and they help you to camouflage so not to be spotted easily by the men below. After several minutes of tedious climbing, you are within an earshot of the men's conversation. They are speaking in a tongue that you have never heard before, but they have an air of menace about them that makes you hesitate, your instincts telling you to get away from this ominous scene as fast as you can. But curiosity has gotten the better of you, and you stay where you are, straining to decipher the strange language and catch any word that you might understand. Suddenly, that word was spoken, but it was the last word you want to hear from the lips of these fierce people, a word that makes you start ascending the cliff with all of the speed that you can muster. The men below take up the cry, Benevem, Benevem, Benevem. That is the town where your father is at the meeting, where your dear mother is shopping. And by the menacing way the men shouted, these were not allies. So the only other people they could be were the dreaded Irish invaders. As you scramble up the cliff, desperate to warn your parents of the dangers to come, you grasp for a small, sturdy-looking tree. But with your sudden weight, the little tree was pulled clean out of the cliff, roots and all. You scrabble at the rock as you lose your balance, toppling off the side of the cliff and right into the unsuspecting arms of the invaders. You are now a captive of the Irish, and so you were taken back to their homeland, and you were sold as a slave to a well-respected priest of their dark beliefs. Your job is assigned to care for the sheep in the mountains as a shepherd. Many were the cold and weary days and nights in the snow and sleet, and slowly you start thinking more and more about this god that your parents worshipped. You have seen and heard enough about the Irish way of thinking for you to know that these people were believing something cruel and evil. You started praying to God, and one snowy, freezing night, God answers your prayers. A wonderful thing starts to happen. Even though you have prayed many times before this was different altogether. You feel the warm comfort and love of the Lord being poured into your heart, and a peace of the kind that you have never experienced before envelops you. You know now for sure that everything that you have ever heard your parents say about the Lord is true, and that in His hands you will never be alone. That He loves you as a son, and has saved you from the terrible fate of hell. This newfound peace carried you through the trial of 6 long years of captivity, until the Lord made a way for you to escape back to your homeland. After you return home, the Lord starts to stir up your heart, and you train to be a pastor. After 6 years of hard work, you feel called, very surprisingly, to return to Ireland as a missionary. Since you are already familiar with the Irish culture, you can understand and respond effectively to the hostile environment, planting churches, training pastors, and confronting chiefs. After a little while, you decide to start spreading the word further into Ireland, but doing so, you must have the permission of Ireland's king. You make the decision to meet the king and to speak with him about the glory of the true God of the Bible. Your friends try to sway you from your course, saying that his tribe was very hostile to outsiders, especially Christians, and that they were more likely to kill you than to let you near their king. But you are determined. So reluctantly, your friends help you to make a plan to bring you directly to the king himself. The plan worked, and you were brought inside to where the king was standing in front of many armed tribesmen. You spoke with the king at length about God. As he questioned you further, you tell him that God is 3 in 1, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. "But that is impossible," they laugh. "No one can be 3 at once. You bend down and pluck a clover from the ground and explain, "Just as this clover is 3 in 1, so my God is 3 in 1. The rest of the crowd nodded. This they could understand. Next, you tell the people of God's love for his children, his power, mercy, justice, and forgiveness. But this made the Druid priests angry, and one of them tries to curse you and your God. Right afterwards, the man gasped, clutched at his chest, and falls to the ground, dead. A tussle begins, darkness falls, and in the confusion, the men start fighting each other. The king falls on his knees before you, begging for you to pray to your God to remove the darkness and confusion. You do so, and immediately there is light once more, and the people calm down. The Druids have left to the mountains. You request to speak to the people. The queen is one of your first converts, and after her baptism, you are Saint Patrick, and you continue to travel around Ireland, preaching, planting churches, training pastors, and defying the dark beliefs of the Druids. You used to be a boy without hope, but now you are a man that gives hope. The Lord can change even the most stubborn of hearts. Turn to him, and let him guide your life in the way of salvation in this broken world.
You are listening to Naturalist Kids Podcast, where we bring the stories of nature to life to encourage you in your quest to learn more about this great world. I'm your host, Joy Cherick, and today I'm joined by Lydia, age 13, Lydia is a part of a podcasting club and chose the topic for today's episode, researched and wrote it as well. Welcome to the podcast, Lydia. If you love our podcast and want to see more episodes like this one about the clover, please consider supporting us through our Patreon site, patreon.com/naturalistkids. There you will find transcripts, nature study lessons, and additional resources to go with each episode. This episode corresponds with Nature Study Hacking, Cultivated Crops and Weeds. Nature Study Hacking teaches families how to get outside and use a nature journal. Head over to naturestudyhacking.com to learn more. Let us consider for a moment what a clover is like. You may think, oh, is that not the lucky magical plant? Is it the plant with heart-shaped leaves? Or is it just simply a weed growing in your garden to get pulled up and add to the pile? As we look closer, however, we will find that despite its size, this little plant that the Lord created has an amazing impact on the rest of the world. For example, did you know that dried clover flower heads and seeds can be ground into flour, and that the leaves can be used in salads or cooked as greens? These are only a few ways clover can be useful. We will uncover even more as we learn together about this amazing plant. Why was the clover considered lucky or even magical?
Long ago, people believed the clover to have magical powers. Three leaves represented the power to guard you from the spells of witches, and four were believed to make the picker able to see fairies and elves. Can you believe it?
That's funny. But how can we identify this plant? How do you know it's a clover?
As I'm sure most of you know, common varieties of clover have green, heart-shaped leaves, with a few exceptions, such as sweet clover, which has long, thin, and slightly jagged leaves. Common clovers have red, white, or yellow blooms. The color varies, depending on the type. But how many different types are there?
So it seems that there are about 300 different kinds of clover around the world today. One that you might not have heard of is called hop clover. They have bright yellow blossoms, and they were introduced to America from Europe and Asia. The hop clover is famously recognized as the Irish shamrock. Another important variety is the bur clover because it is related to alfalfa plant. Are there any more uses that clover can give, Lydia?
Yes, many. People have used clover for all sorts of things over the centuries, some of which we will probably never know. We do know that clover fixes nitrogen in the soil, which means it helps beneficial bacteria thrive and nourish surrounding plants. Of the most common types of clover in America and around the world today.
Clovers are most common in America. Are white clover and red clover. White clover is also common in England and Scotland. The round-headed bush clover is most common in China. I didn't even know China had clover. The word for clover comes from the Latin name for clover, which is trifolium. From the Latin word tri, meaning three, and folium, meaning leaf. Lydia, what is your favorite type of clover?
My favorite type of clover is the scarlet clover.
I love that clover too. What other types of clover have you discovered?
Some other kinds of clover are the cow's clover, running buffalo clover, and the hare's foot clover. We have a joke for you. Why shouldn't you iron a four-leaf clover? We'll share with you the answer in a bit.
The Farmer's Problem, written by Lydia. Once upon a time, there lived a young farmer. Now, this farmer had several acres of land and a snug little cottage at the end of a little town. He lived in the little cottage with his wife and baby. The first year, the farmer bought 2 bags of seed and a plow in the town, then brought it back to his farm and out into his barren field. He pulled his plow to turn over the dirt, and then went back over the freshly turned earth and scattered seeds over it. Thinking the job was done, for he was young and inexperienced, he returned home. Through the rest of the season, he watered the seeds faithfully, but the crops were poor and sickly. The farmer was puzzled and worried because the crop was so bad, and that meant he and his family would have little to eat that winter. Early the next year, the farmer went into town again and asked around if anyone could give him guidance. He found an old farmer, weary and calloused from years of hard work. The young farmer took the older one aside and asked him, "Sir, may I bother you with a few questions from one of little experience?" The old farmer coughed and strained. "Of course, my young man. Tell me of your trouble, and I shall do my best to help you." "Thank you, sir. I appreciate your kindness," said the young farmer. "My trouble is this. Early last year, I bought a plow and seeds for my barren field. I plowed the field and planted the seeds. I watered them every day, but at the end of the year, they did not thrive as I expected, but were poor and sickly. Please tell me what I have missed so that I may be more fruitful this year." The old farmer looked down and smiled. "My young man," he said fondly, "you have forgotten one very important step in growing your crop, the soil. Your soil is in very poor condition, and it is vital for you to improve it before trying to grow another crop. Otherwise, it will be just as bad as last year's harvest." The young farmer, looking distressed, asked, "Sir, how can I fix this problem, for I have very little money?" The old man looked surprised. "Why, clover, of course. There are many other plants that nourish the soil, but clover is the easiest to find and will grow anywhere. Clover enriches the soil and, through it, gives vital nutrients to the surrounding plants. Plant a crop of clover well before your crop this year, and in the years to come, your harvest will be twice what it was last year." The young man radiated joy. "Thank you, sir, for enlightening me to the course of my actions. I shall follow your wise advice." So the young farmer bought 3 bags of clover seeds and spread them over his land. The clover thrived, nourishing the unhealthy soil as well as the nearby animals. The next season, the farmer gently plowed the ground once again and planted the seeds as before. The plants flourished amid the surrounding clover, and that year there was a wonderful harvest. It took many years of planting the clover for the farmer's land to become as rich as the old man had promised. But when it was so, the harvest was great indeed. The man, his wife, son, and new baby had a large sum of money from selling the produce at market, with plenty of food left over for them to eat during the cold months of winter. The moral of the story is, take care of the soil, and the soil will take care of you.
We have a clover poem for you. It's called Clover by John Bannister Tabb. Little masters, hat in hand, let me in your presence stand, till your silence solve for me this your threefold mystery. Tell me, for I long to know, how in darkness there below was your fairy fabric spun, spread and fashioned, 3 in 1. Did your gossips, gold and blue, sky and sunshine, choose for you, ere your triple forms were seen, suited liveries of green? Can ye, if ye dwelt indeed, captives of a prison seed, like the genie once again, get you back into the grain? Little masters, may I stand, in your presence hat in hand, waiting till you solve for me this your threefold mystery. This is the answer to our joke now. Are you ready? Why shouldn't you iron a four-leaf clover? You would be pressing your luck.
Thank you for joining us today as we learned about clover. I hope you learned something new. Please join us next time as we learn about ants. We will leave you with a quote.
From Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul."